The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum, and we're joined in studio by three guests, Regina Doherty, MEP of Fine Gael, Michael Fitzmaurice, TD Independent Ireland, and Louise Byrne, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Now, we're going to talk about Gaza, we're going to talk about the National Development Plan, but I thought we might start with a conversation we had earlier in the programme about the summer holidays. And to set the scene for you, the school holidays, are they too long? This one here says, I'm sick of the alternative route to college. This is because people have to do the Leaving Cert, the Junior Cert and so on. It is possible to live without a college education, or at least it should be. We need builders, makers, repairers, painters. We need trades. The big six-letter no-no. And AI, of course, cannot do the jobs of painters and plumbers and all the rest of it. Here now, Pat, you mean a teacher must be happy with only 2 weeks off at Christmas, 2 weeks off at Easter, one at spring midterm, one at autumn midterm, Croke Park days off, and only 4 weeks off at the summer. Ah, come on now, Pat. That's someone who's a little bit cynical about the teaching profession. John says, though, back in my school days, our mother sent us out to play with our pals for the day, only returning to eat our lunch and dinner. Happy days, but alas, all gone now. You do realise that if school halls are to be shortened, teachers will have to be paid even more. Kids do need the break. Parents need to parent and organise themselves to mind their kids. Parents give out about us teachers all the time, but when they have to mind their own children, they can't deal with it. I work with parents who tell me they'd rather work than stay at home with the kids. Parents resent paying for childcare, summer camps, etc., but will happily splash out on wine, gyms, fancy cars, etc. The taxpayer expected to pay for everything. Parents, stop whinging. Your kids, your choice, your responsibility. Jog on. And maybe one about Scandinavia has always been quoted. In most Scandinavian countries, the school remains open for activities during the summer. We have a huge wasted facility resource in this country. In addition, the pre- and after-school care in state-funded subsidised in Scandinavia. Childcare available up to 45 hours per week all year round, with one exception, and that is Christmas. And a final one, which is very different. I feel compelled to give my opinion on school holidays. We are farmers and can be flexible with time, therefore absolutely love having the kids at home. I delight in their existence and the holidays are bliss. I can enjoy their company and they're not rushing off to school, training and other activities. They get a chance to just be. We are human beings, just let them be. I know it's easy for me to say, but I just wanted to make that point. My heart breaks every start of the school year. I miss them so much. And that's from a parent that likes the holidays just as they are. Thank you very much. Regina.
Come here, there's nothing more political than starting to talk about teachers and parents and students. From those texts, a couple of people maybe got out of bed on the wrong side this morning. So as a mother, sometimes when the holidays were long, it was difficult to find things to amuse your children for kind of 8 weeks or 12 weeks. But as they got older, they found things for themselves. And like there was one tweet that you read out or text that you read out reminded me of my childhood. Like I'd get up in the morning, my mother would kick me out of the house. She'd have to come looking for me. Now, OK, life isn't the same and we all have rose tinted glasses. But teachers work incredibly hard. And actually the challenges in the school classroom today are very, very different than they would have been 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I think we don't give them enough credit for that because their job isn't just teaching anymore.
Now, we've been told by people that teachers, that for example, they have to be vigilant all the time because parents think that their child is the only important child in the world. Back in the day, again, the rose-tinted glasses, you got into trouble with the teacher, your mother and father say, what did you do? It's your fault. You know, that kind of thing. And you wouldn't even go home and tell your mother you got into trouble because that would mean more trouble.
I'm not sure that's the case anymore.
No, it's not the case anymore. So teachers have a bigger burden to bear.
I have a huge amount of respect for teachers and I have four children, went through primary, secondary school and now in college. When I see somehow the teachers being treated by other parents at parent-teacher meetings, I go back to the 10-year-old or 15-year-old self thinking I'd be afraid of my life to say something like that to a teacher or a guard. The environment that we live in and that they're teaching in today is different than it was years ago. So, I mean, I have respect for them. I think they do a great job. They've certainly done a great job at my kids. And let them have their holidays and let our kids have their holidays.
Michael?
Yeah, look, it's changed times. I remember in my time, there was plenty to do for the summer because if you're out the country, as someone has pointed out, you were sent to the bog or you were put at hay or something. You know, you were never idle. It's a different Ireland, though, Pat, because for the simple reason, one time ago, there wasn't as many people working as there is now. There was a lot of grandmothers in that just mind youngsters at home. But you are correct, in fairness, I wouldn't be a teacher for anything at the moment. I was on a board of management, and like any bit of a scrape at all, you know, their son or their daughter is the only thing that ever existed, no one else. And geez, you put up with a fair bit at the moment. We're mollycoddling them too much, to be quite frank about it, and we need to toughen them up, in my opinion. We need to, somebody brought up there about other jobs. Everyone thinks their Johnny or Mary is going to be a doctor or a lawyer or something. We must realise that you'll need a road and a building before they can be that put in place. And no one, you know, everyone looks down, which I'm a firm believer that we need to promote apprenticeships. We need to make sure that we have enough of a workforce there, because there's a huge living to be made out of it now. It's not boom and bust like it just be one time. There's more consistency in it. And look at a young fella on a site at the moment driving a tractor can get fairly good money that if you're going to college a number of years to take you a while to get it, even if you want to be an engineer.
Louise.
I miss my school holidays, to be perfectly honest. I miss that little 3 months off, but it is an awful long time. And I think perhaps the kids we need to be thinking of are the kids in deaf schools, or the kids, you know, with autism, or the kids in disadvantaged areas.
Who are thriving on the support they get within the school environment, and then sometimes they're caught adrift for 12 weeks and...
Yeah, and I mean, I was actually speaking to someone just about completely randomly yesterday about something else, and they were saying that they have a child with the additional needs, and even the cost of sending that child to summer camp is double the price of sending a child
and
with
neurotypical. And you may have difficulties getting a child with special needs into summer camp, because the summer camp doesn't want to take on the additional and very specific responsibilities that go with that.
Yeah, and so I mean, it is, for some kids, it's fine. They can, you know, they can entertain themselves. They're going to, a couple of months off school is not going to make a huge difference to them. But there are kids who need additional support, and it's an awful long time for them to be off the summer holidays. And I mean, teachers get paid for their summer holidays anyway. So that text about if you want teachers to work more hours, they're going to have to be paid more. They get paid anyway. So I think that's a bit of a false argument, but it's, I'm going to have the teachers on to me now giving out. But I mean, it's an awfully long time. For some kids, it's fine, but you would worry perhaps for some of those other children who might be more vulnerable, living in a vulnerable household where everything is not okay at home. And again, those kids with additional needs. So it is something that I think perhaps should be looked at.
Yeah. I mean, in Britain, they have 6 weeks holidays for England, Scotland, Wales, and people calling for it to be reduced to four. In other words,
that tells you people are never happy, regardless of what the situation is. But to say, we do have an increased summer provision. Now, it's certainly not enough, and it should be more, and I wish there was more staff available for it. But summer provision is there for the state to try and look after those children that can't cope with the break.
For a week or two, though.
Yeah, no, as I said, it does need to be more. I wish it was more.
The other thing we have to, you know, there's... Parents are very, you know, they are minding their children. They're afraid. One time ago when we were young, to put it simple, we cycled down to the local GA pitch. It was 3 or 4 miles down the road. You weren't, parents weren't as protective because they probably felt it was safer at the given time. And now we don't believe that a 12 or 14-year-old can bile the kittle and look after themselves. We have to be there with them the whole time. We need to give responsibility and make them grow up a bit quicker.
Mm. Yeah, kids have gone way too soft, haven't they?
Well,
look at
they're in, and parents are gone working. You see, there's two sides to this. I believe the teacher. I would never be a teacher because I'll tell you it's a tough job. But the other side of this is two parents are working. They're trying to make provision for their child. There's someone to look after them, and it's a tough game at the moment that way. But you have to try and balance it as best you can. Yeah.
Now, when I was a kid, our summer holiday was the Phoenix Park, you know, because my father worked in Dublin Zoo. But all of that park, every inch of it, I know like the back of my hand, whether it was the dog pond or the 15 acres or the Magazine Hill. And yet, you know, we were aware as children that there were some ne'er-do-wells lurking, and we avoided them without necessarily sharing that information with our parents.
Yeah, but the only thing, I'd say the ne'er-do-wells are a bit worse in certain instances
at
the
moment. Yeah, for sure.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You have to make sure that you give as much protection as you can. It's a balance, and maybe sometimes we go from one side of the road to the other that we're too protective at times. And look, if something goes wrong, then you're scratching your head. I understand all that. But we do need to make sure that, you know, one thing, I'll give you one example. One thing I can never understand is that when we were under 12, we won 2 county under 12 titles. You die for a jersey. You die to win something. Nowadays, they go out and everyone is given a middle, whether you were the worst or the less. Like, that doesn't work in my book.
Yeah. Regina, finally, you wouldn't want to be the one negotiating with the teachers' unions to shorten their summer holidays?
I wouldn't, no. No, it'd take a brave minister, to be fair.
It would. Political consensus would be required, and then that's only before you start the negotiation. I want to change tack now and talk about the story that's dominating the week, and I'm going to do that by reading a text from somebody. I'm a 46-year-old man, and I've seen the various famines and wars through the 80s and 90s, and I felt bad, and I've turned a blind eye and shrugged my shoulders like most people, I suggest. To my shame, I've fast-forwarded the parts of the news showing atrocities in Syria, Rwanda and the likes. Last night on the Six News, I saw a father looming over his skeletal daughter and I burst into tears. I'm not religious, but if there is a hell, there is a special place in it for the Israeli leader and his ilk. Our political leaders make a lot of mistakes, but standing with the people of Palestine is something I give them immense credit for. And others are maybe slowly, reluctantly, Regina, following suit, with Macron now in France deciding to recognise.
So I have to honestly say, I think Emmanuel Macron's statement last night is going to be a game changer, particularly for us in Europe. And I have to hand it to people like Leo Varadkar, Simon Harris, Micheál Martin, because it was a lonely path, you know, 18 months ago, 2 years ago, when they started calling out for what it is, the actions of the IDF and the Israeli people. But thankfully now, I noticed yesterday, even Bob Geldof said last night on the radio or on the television that, you know, Keir Starmer sees events unfolding. They're not unfolding. These atrocities have been going on for months and months and months, and there are more children and people being killed looking for food in the last number of months than were killed and murdered. Brutally, I must say.
Now, you know, Starmer himself was a prosecutor about a genocide before, a much smaller kind of theatre of activity than Gaza is. Yeah. So he knows what genocide looks like. He knows what.
Too much politics has got in the way for the last 12 months. And even I can see it now in the European Union, even in my own group. The politics of history, of what's in your DNA, has been allowed to influence people's, what they actually can see with their own eyes. And it's not good enough.
But isn't it fair to say that Israel constantly plays the Holocaust card?
You know what? I don't want to go down that road, because the first thing that I'll be accused of is being anti-Semitic. What happened was absolutely appalling, atrocious, and we absolutely must learn from it. But the actions of today tells us that we haven't learned from it. And the people that we were sticking up for because they were so brutally treated by previous regimes are now the ones that are actually treating the people of Palestine and Gaza with so little dignity or care that they're not even treating them as humans.
Their history, which was catastrophic and awful and the worst, really, event of the 20th century, is allowed to put them beyond criticism in many quarters, and that's
but it shouldn't, because
and
it's
yet
not
Macron
an excuse.
France has the largest population of Jewish people in Europe, so it takes maybe a little bit more bravery from Macron than it might for
so
others.
So that's why I really think his statement last night is going to be a game changer, and I think you really will see the United Kingdom now within the next weeks or days, hopefully, saying that they will do the same and recognise Palestine as a state.
Louise,
and the force has to come forcefuller.
I think that might be where perhaps Ireland is different, because I don't know necessarily if a lot of people see it through the prism of religion. And I think everyone's respects everyone's right to practice whatever religion they want. But I think the people of Ireland and the Irish government are not seeing it as a base of religion. They're seeing it as a base of humanitarian.
But I mean, again, even mentioning religion, it's not about Judaism. It's not about religion. It is about the current actions of the current Israeli government. And to conflate Jewishness and this Israeli government is a mistake.
But this is the issue
all
the time.
They're separate.
This is the issue all the time. And I think that is why a lot of countries may be afraid to speak out, because once you do, you're accused of being anti-Semitic. And I don't think that that's how a lot of people see it. And I think the scenes that we're seeing, particularly this week, I mean, I agree with your texter. I was eating my dinner last night watching the news, looking at all these starving children. You almost feel guilty for being, you know, fortunate enough to have a plate of dinner in front of you. It's absolutely unimaginable what's happening. And even the thought that the doctors in the hospitals are themselves starving, that they're nearly fainting trying to save these poor people, and the fact that they're so spread out and they're so like spread thin that they can't even help some of the people that are coming in, because there's so many gunshot wounds, there's real injuries, that they can't help the starving people. 600,000 people at the risk of malnutrition. It just, in a country, in a world as rich as we are, it is absolutely criminal that these people are being allowed to starve to death.
Michael?
First of all, it's horrendous when you look at the television last night and even other nights. But we were brought up in an era where there was certain, what I would call, men in suits that you believed was going to solve things, like the say the United Nations and the World Trade Organization, all the different bodies, they have been just kicked to one side. No one has a say at the moment. Basically, Netanyahu is doing what he wants, backed up by Trump. And you can have all the talk in the world and you can have all the statements in the world, but at the end of the day, people are dying out there and nothing has been done because basically America and Israel are together. And it is asking a lot of questions, Pat, of world order at the moment, of what counts now, who is important or who's not, who can solve things. Have a look at Europe. Have a look at von der Leyen that you all supported in the last few weeks. Have a look at the way she has stood by Israel. It is scandalous to think. And you talk about here that our leaders, well, in fairness, it was the opposition that brought them kicking and screaming through the bills that they were putting forward in the line of Gaza over the last year. Louise would know that. You know, it's. I believe that they're doing what they want at the moment, and there's no accountability, Pat. And we can talk here about it, and it's horrendous, and it makes you feel guilty. But the one thing is, who's going to solve this? It's basically America back in Israel.
But isn't it Trump is the key, or whoever is pulling Trump's strings? Because I'm not sure that he's actually across everything on the agenda. There are people behind him who are really sinister people.
But where does NATO stand? Where does the UN stand? Where is the what we looked at growing up as the people that resolve issues and are the power? It is gone.
Well, the issue is they're not being listened to as well.
Right.
And
yeah.
The only person...
So then what are they?
Yeah, well, the only person who seems to have any... And I don't even know what kind of sway, very limited sway you would think on Benjamin Netanyahu is Donald Trump,
yeah.
Who is just so volatile. He kind of, you just never know what side of the argument he's going to be on any given day. And I think the US teams leaving Qatar yesterday saying that they couldn't anymore try and negotiate a ceasefire, I think that was really, really damaging.
Yeah, but Louise, Europe is helping Israel through arms.
Totally.
What have they done?
Totally, yeah.
What have they done? Nothing.
I think there should be more pressure on Europe, and I think you even see, and I think it's hard as well because obviously it is the member states, and I think in fairness to Ireland, we have done ourselves proud. We're the first to call for the stopping of the EU-Israeli trade agreement. We were one of the first to recognise Palestine, and I think it's hard, and I think countries need to look at themselves when they're pushing back against all these things being done at an EU level.
The secret of sorting this out and Trump's ambitions to get the Nobel Peace Prize, two things: if he did tomorrow, everything would stop. Stop arming Israel. Say no more. Either you stop doing what you're doing in Gaza and start feeding the people, or there's nothing more coming. Your Iron Dome refill ammunition and all of that, we're not going to give it to you, making them vulnerable. Second thing he does, he arms Ukraine. He does the reverse of the Ukraine and says, OK, we're going to arm Ukraine to the teeth, Vladimir. If you don't like it, stop the war. You know?
So I think we have to remind ourselves that this is the gentleman that talked about Gaza Riviera. Mm. So when you talk about him not necessarily being across everything or invested, when it suits him, he is. And also, he's only one man. As you say, there's an army of people behind him from an official perspective.
People laugh at this, but his negotiator, Witkoff, is a real estate guy.
I know.
He's not a politician, he's not a diplomat.
Have a look at both scenarios, Ukraine and have a look at Israel. When the war starts in Ukraine, Europe, everyone else, made sure that they had sanctions and took hard sanctions, which was rightly so it was done, against Russia. That commitment or that friendship isn't there with them at the moment. And that's a big problem. It's two different scenarios, and the same thing is called war. And we have treated it in two different ways. Mm. So huge questions has to be asked of Europe. Huge questions has to be asked of America and indeed the rest of the world.
Michael, I can tell you from my experience is that that's the easiest example to say, hold on, we can't have double standards. Rightly so, we're supporting Ukraine from a horrible invader and we'll millions, billions probably at this stage, and arm them or whatever else we can do. And yet you just ignore what's going on, you know, a couple of hundred miles down the road. So there is a real dichotomy here because there are very, very powerful nations for historic reasons or for whatever are absolutely refusing to budge and even a millimetre from what they viewed. We have week in, week out, we have votes against funding UNRWA. We have votes against the texts that are in school books. Like, such nonsense when we can actually see visually the degradation that's being caused by unchecked actions of the Israeli government and the Israeli army. And even when you hear some of the examples of just pure hatred of the actions of the Israeli army. You can't believe that they're a professional army when they deal with children in the way that we've heard over
and
the last
couple of
days.
And there's stories of target again, practice by members of the IDF.
My brain doesn't even understand that.
Targeting the genitals of teenagers so that they can't reproduce.
So I honestly, and I say this to you really respectfully, the way you change the mindsets of people is being in the room with them, which is what we've tried to do from an Irish perspective. We now have the Portuguese, we have the Spanish. It's growing. France getting on board will be a game changer, and I God hope with my prayers every night that it only takes days and not weeks and months.
The only fear I have that Netanyahu is going to keep driving on. He has basically given the two fingers to everyone.
But that's because we've let him.
And what Hamas was done is wrong as well. There's no one condoning that. But what they are doing at the moment with the, basically, as you've pointed out, Pat, you know, shoot you in the head today, shoot you in the genitals tomorrow.
It's fueled by pure hate.
Oh, that is outlandish.
I want to move on. And the National Development Plan, of course, was the big political set piece this week. Regina, a lot of people are underwhelmed. Lack of detail, they say. And I went on this interactive map, which was, I don't know, designed by somebody who really wasn't intuitive about their design, because I couldn't make head nor tail of it. Very difficult to handle.
So you know what? The last plan that we had, and you'll remember this, Pat, we were told that there was too much detail. It had 125 pages of blurb. This time there's near 50 pages. We're told there's too light. What I know is that I had European colleagues over on a mission to Dublin this week to meet with our tax experts. They thought 275 billion euros was mouthwatering. They actually still in their minds still think that Ireland is kind of a little old country. It is mouthwatering amount of money that we're going to spend on physical infrastructure development over the next 7 years. And it isn't without its detail, right? So just top level, we're getting new trains to go to Belfast. We're getting the funding of Metro. We're getting Rosslare. Like, there are lists of people for, you know, data, not to be disrespectful to you, but if you want to go and find the data, the projects that are a priority for us, top of the list, which is housing, is all there. The amount of water or money that's going to be given to water infrastructure. And I think for me, the biggest, apart from the money that's being spent, changes in this development plan are the removal of the bureaucracy. Taking the five-step progress to getting a plan approved from five steps to three steps is a great start. The increasing the 100 million to 200 million for people like Irish Water to be able to make decisions on projects instead of having to go to deeper and wait for 3 months or 6 months to get a yes or a no. That's instructive. There's real progress being made here and eye-watering amounts of money being spent for Irish citizens.
Louise, were you impressed
better
when you saw the document and maybe played with the map?
I haven't played with the map. I might do that later. I was going to say I was a bit underwhelmed with the document when I got it at the press conference on Tuesday, but we actually got it after the press conference had wrapped up on Tuesday. But I mean, this argument of, the old development plan was too long, it had too much in it. But we had the details of the projects that were being done and we had a greater level of detail. And I mean, Regina's saying it was 49 pages long. That was only 35 pages of actual content because there were so many drawings and, you know, speeches from ministers in it, chapter titles. Like, there wasn't actually a huge amount of detail. Yes, it is a huge amount of money. Yes, we do need to invest in things like our water and our grid because we've seen the problems that can cause when it comes to building homes. But I mean, I think taxpayers expect to see more with their money. And the fact that we have to wait until the budget in October to learn what these projects are, I think gives people the impression that the government is trying to muddy the waters here and say, well, maybe give the impression that, well, we're not going to have a big budget, we're not going to have our cost of living packages that we had before, but look at all these new projects we're doing, and it's going to make it look like a budget announcement when it's not really. So it's trying to muddy the waters and I think dampen people's expectations for what's going to be a poor budget.
Michael?
First of all, it's a huge amount of money, but are we going to get value for money, Pat?
That's a big question, a central question.
The detail in it is very vague, in my opinion. I hope it works out because it needs to work out. But the only thing, what's going to change? With the amount of money we've used between, we'll say, 21 and 26, what have we to show for it in the line of huge infrastructural projects? We have damn all. We have a hospital that's ballooned out of price. And I hope that we know how to build things and do it efficiently. Regina talked about the metro. There's a portion of money there, but I'll tell you, it's like the bottom of the bucket and it leaking, because what the metro will cost compared with what's allowed for there at the moment is two different things. Like, the metro is going to cost huge money. Like, no one say it won't, if it's to be built at all. There'll be promises made.
When it's built, Michael.
Second of all, Pat, what we must understand, and I worked in water and sewerage around the country, before you put a bucket on the ground, you could be 3 to 4 years before you can spend that money. That's the one problem. And unless we change our planning system and call an emergency and infrastructure for bids, the likes of Irish Water for sewerage and for water and for roads. Unless we do that, and unless we put an emergency into housing, we can have all the money in the world and all the glassy magazines and all the things. But look at, we talked about in the Dáil 4, 5, 6 months ago that we're going to have modular homes at the back of houses, that we're going to have a granny flat, that we're going to let on. What has happened? Nothing. If you're going to move things, you bring in emergency legislation that day and you say, we're going on this now. You're not talking about it. All these announcements and announcements.
Well, now,
this is
fair,
about putting houses on the ground.
To be fair,
and have a look at the figures so far this year and have a look at what's projected. And if you look at the dynamic of the population and the numbers of houses you require compared with what's being done, it's not going to solve anything.
But to be fair, Michael, and I take your point, and it's one of the things that I'm fighting for on the Housing Committee in Europe, is because of our planning and our permitting system does extend, you know, people's route to actually building. But to be fair, in this National Development Plan, you can see the reduction of the core phases or stages of planning from 5 to 3. That's really, really welcome. You can see the major project advisory group, 10 projects have already gone through that group, and you can see the experts in that group and how they actually can clear out the rubble and the issues to make sure that we do fast track projects.
But do you
not
agree,
everything can be an emergency. This is normal time, peace time plan for the next 7 years.
Do you not agree that if you have to go through the planning process, which they have to go through, whichever size it is, be it on Board Planall or be it the local councils, that we're still going down the road of being slowed down, especially with social housing, especially with infrastructure? If we want houses, the first thing we've got to do is have roads, sewer and water, and we are lacking badly in that. And second of all, in that document, and I'd hope to be, I couldn't fathom it, and maybe Pat or both of ye could, I couldn't fathom, was there 10 billion in or 11 billion in on the housing budget for water, or was it separate? I couldn't fathom it.
Well, we'll have to draw a close to our discussion there. We'll finish, though, on a nice text about the holidays. In my childhood in the 1960s, the only places I was bored in were the classrooms and in the church. We spent our holidays outdoors, even in the rain. We learned a lot of skills by trial and error. And a final one from Jill. I used to love having my children at home for the holidays, and I organised my holidays to be with them. They're now grown up and I really miss those times. Don't wish your children away too easily. It'll happen before you know it. And you will miss them.
Like mortgage, you have them for 20 years.
Okay. Regina Doherty, MEP for Fine Gael, Michael Fitzmaurice, TD Independent Ireland, and Louise Byrne, political correspondent of the Irish Examiner. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.